the OTB Podcast Network.
Off the ball.
I heard a few of your teammates in defence talking about Zlatan, and did anything strike you about his play being on the same pitch as him?
The fella is obviously looks after himself so well. He was doing crazy kicks over the height of my head during the warm-up. So for such a big man, he was like a ghost on the pitch. You couldn't pick him up.
Off the ball.
Weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Live 24-7 on the OTB Sports app.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're streaming live as well, so you can also watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it. For most of the year, it's been a worrying time for older people during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're going to gain some wisdom from the older stars of the sporting world on this week's Saturday panel. The week's panel on OTB this week about celebrating and connecting older people in our communities, with thanks to the charity Alone, and is supported by Guinness. This campaign, Drink Responsibly, visit drinkaware.ie. So one third of older Irish people live alone, and the charity Alone does great work in providing a support system for older people throughout Ireland, helping and empowering older people, whether it's a volunteer that befriends an older person in their home, practical housing support, or financial and legal advice. There is a charity out there with thousands of volunteers. We all know somebody who lives alone. I know myself, my uncle is 86 and lives in Limerick. Try to see him as much as we can and give him support. But most importantly, have a chat with him and see how he's doing, and enjoy his company and have a great conversation. My mother is 81, and I'm sure many people out there know somebody who's of the older generation. We're delighted to be joined by three legends of sport to see how they're getting on. The former Republic of Ireland manager and player, league winner with Leeds United, and FA Cup winner with Manchester United, John Giles. The oldest person to ever drive a Formula One car, Rosemary Smith. And the six-time All-Ireland hurling winner with Kilkenny, Eddie Kerr. John, Rosemary and Eddie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's go back, John Giles, to January of this year. Normally, in a situation where we've a football season, John, you'd be sitting right here in the Off the Ball studio back in January.
Well, not back at RTE. I was finished a few years ago, John. I'm only joking. But we had a gap, as you know. But then once it restarted, then it was match after match after match. So, and the season has started again. So, I do a bit of work, as you know, for Off the Ball, and I do it Eamon Dunphy's podcast. So it's been reasonably busy in that sense, with the matches starting again. Thank goodness.
And how has your life changed over the last few months, John?
It hasn't actually changed that much. I'm not a big socializer. I don't go out very much anyway. And I'm living in Birmingham, so we were allowed to go out for walks, which I normally do. I have two kids living here in Birmingham as well, which they kept away. So we missed that. And I miss going to Dublin. I need to go to Dublin, and I can't go. But generally speaking, it hasn't affected me that much, except that I'm terrified by it. If I go out for a walk, and I went out one day for a walk, and there was two ladies coming by, and I stopped, they were asking me directions, and I shouldn't have done that. Well, that's what I thought anyway. And of course, I was worried then for the next 10 days to see if I'd get any symptoms, you know. I'm driving my wife mad, John, to be quite honest, because if I get a tiny tickle in the throat, I'm complaining to her. I think I have this virus. So I am terrified of it because, as you know, at my age, it's very, very dangerous. But so far, fingers crossed, okay, and I can get up and do a walk, and it's enough at the moment anyway. No golf or anything like that, of course.
And I say a lot of this, John, is to do with the fact that your friends very sadly passed away, Norman Hunter.
Yeah, we had a couple. Norman passed away from the virus. A lad called Trevor Cherry that I played with for a few years as well had a heart attack. And Big Jack, as we know, didn't have the virus, passed away. So there were three colleagues that passed away over the last, within, I think, 4 or 5 weeks of each other, which was very sad. I think Jack wasn't well at all for a while, but Norman Hunter was a big shock, a huge shock. Norman was a very good pal, and he got the virus, and he had underlying conditions, and he didn't recover from it. Trevor Cherry, I thought when I heard the news, he actually had a heart attack. And we were together at Christmas time because the group players from my time at Leeds got the freedom of city at Leeds. So that's the last time we were together, and we were making plans. I would go up to Leeds and have a night out with all the lads. We're still very close with each other. So all that was put on the back burner, and hopefully we'll get together in the relatively near future anyway.
And John, I think it illustrates what you're saying about the importance of a support structure, having people around you, maybe even being able to do what you're doing now, going on technical calls on Skype and being in touch with people that you might not be able to see that you would have been able to see.
Oh, yes. It's great. I know the cause you're promoting today, which is great. I'm very, very lucky. My wife and I, our health is reasonably good. We have two of the kids. We have six kids altogether. Two living quite near us in Birmingham that can bring the stuff in that we need and all that. So we're very, very lucky to have that. And it is a very difficult time, I can imagine, for some of the older people who are lonely and can't fend for themselves and need the help that you're giving them. I think it's a great cause. From my own point of view, I'm lucky enough to be okay in that respect.
And Rosemary, for you, you were running a driving school, and that's probably been completely upended now.
Absolutely and completely. And, you know, I just have nothing to do, basically, since the 10th of March was my last school day, because what we do is we take the transition year classes down to my place down in Goffs in Kildare. And, of course, none of us could work since the 10th. The 10th of March was the last day I worked. I can't even do my private ones because I'm of the age that now I'm high risk. And, the days are very long now because I was so used to being out and about. I was never at home. I was doing this, doing talks since I did the book, I think it's about 2 years ago now. And I went all around the country. And of course, I spent a lot of time in England also because, you know, I'm an ambassador for a lot of the big clubs in England. But all that, of course, has stopped. So, and then a lot of events I was to do. There was one from London up to Moscow. That was, you know, off, obviously. And we're even wondering about the ones that I'm meant to be doing next year, which go from, you know, London to, I think it's Dusseldorf or somewhere, and then one in America. And all these things are off. So, you know, but the one thing, it keeps me going, thinking what might be happening, you know. And I'm quite enjoying it. For the first few months, I enjoyed the lockdown. I do live on my own, but I've got wonderful neighbours, I must say. They are really fantastic. And they looked after me like their old granny, basically. But I have a beautiful garden now, I must say. I've never worked so hard in the garden as I am doing. But then after the first few months, when I think, like everybody else, we thought, well, this will last for a few months and then it'll be over and now, unfortunately, it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I'll say it again, and I say it all the time, an awful lot of people still haven't copped on to what they're meant to be doing. You know, keep your distance, wear your mask, wash your hands. I met a friend there the other day, and, you know, I just at a distance, I might add. And I said, you know, how are you doing? And he said, oh, I'm doing fine. And I said, but where's your mask? And he said, oh, I don't need that sort of nonsense. And I said, well, the newspapers, television, what about all these things when they're telling you to do? Oh, he said, I couldn't be bothered. That's all bad news. So I don't watch it, and I don't take any heed of it. But then you see, when you've got a total idiot, and I'm sorry to use the words, but Donald Trump telling people, don't be afraid of the virus. I mean, it's not going to hurt anybody. I mean, is the man a total halfwit? But people, unfortunately, are listening to that sort of thing. But as I say, besides that, I can't work. That's what's frustrating, because I've worked all my life. I have worked from the day I was 15, and I think Johnny said something about his father or his mother or something. But, you know, when you get to 83 and you've had a really exciting life and a very tough life, let me hastily add. I mean, to drive from London to Mexico City, right around Europe first, and then down to São Paulo and right across South America and up into Mexico City. And that was day, night, day, night, day, night. You know, it was hard going, but, you know, people say, why did somebody climb Mount Everest? Because it was there. Why did I drive on a rally from London to Mexico City? Because other people were doing it. And I couldn't, I'd do it again now. Like you said about the Formula One drive. You know, when I was asked, because I'm an ambassador for Renault Ireland, and when I was asked, would I like to drive a Formula One car? I mean, I was 79 at the time. And I said, yes, please. I never even thought about it. Then, mind you, I don't have children or a husband that is going to say, oh, don't do that. You're far too old. People would say, go try it. You know, why not do it? So I did it. And, you know, it was, well, it was scary. I must be honest. I was terrified when I got into the car initially. But then once I started going, I was fine because, you know, but it's so different because the clutch is behind the steering wheel and, well, it's not a steering wheel, it's sort of a little bow thing. And, you know, it was so different and I didn't get very much practice. I think I only got about 3 laps of a practice, but it was out in Paul Ricard out in France. And it was fantastic. And the one thing was funny, just when they were pushing me out of the pit and, you know, out and they were sending me on my way. And then one of the mechanics said, you know, Jeremy Clarkson was here. And Jeremy, he stalled it and stalled it and stalled it. And Jeremy and I hadn't really seen eye to eye on many occasions. And I said, if he stalled it, I'm damned if I'm going to stall it. I said, if I have to get out and push it and jump in again or something. But the young mechanic, he said, just ease off now with the clutch and so on and so on and so on. So I said, fine. So away I went and I didn't stall it at all. And the nicest part of the whole thing was when I came back, when I was flagged off and I came back into the pit lane and then all the mechanics came out and they all stood around and started to clap. And, you know, I sort of felt that I'd done something, even though, I mean, I've done a lot, you know, bigger and better things all my life. But that was just it. It was a challenge and I'm up to any challenge. But I did say to Renault, I am not going to climb Mount Everest in my skin or I'm not jumping out of an aeroplane without a parachute. No, thank you.
Brilliant, Rosemary. So, Eddie, we've heard about Donald Trump there. We've heard about Jeremy Clarkson. I know that's all fine. I know you're a keen golfer, Eddie. Have you been able to get back out on the course? What's life been like for you in Kilkenny in the last few months?
Well, I suppose, John, I'm very lucky where I live. I'm living in the country, and I suppose, like John, I love to walk. And we have, I'm living in Inistig, South Kilkenny, a beautiful part of the world. I'm looking over the Nore, the village of Inistig, the Nore, and the lovely bridge. And during the lovely weather, during the real lockdown, you know, we were able to sit out and have coffee and look at the scenery. Then, like Rosemary there, we have a huge garden which had gone a bit, I suppose, unruly, is a nice word to put it, and over the last number of years. It's a huge garden on a slope. But we got, myself and my wife, Kay, got into that, and we have it back to pretty good shape now. It's not garden of the year or anything, but it's manageable. So, as I said, we're lucky to be in the country and have all the lovely things. There's lovely walks here. We have Woodstock Gardens, which have a series of different walks you can do there. And there's a new walk down by the river called the Point Road. So I've been walking every day, and particularly during the re-lockdown where we couldn't move only, I think it was 2 kilometres from the house. Now, of course, we're just confined to the county, and you mentioned golf, John. I'm very lucky. My own golf club is New Ross Golf Club, as you know, New Ross in Wexford, but actually the New Ross Golf Club is in County Kilkenny. So I've been playing there quite a lot. Also, I'm very close to Mount Juliet and have a few friends who are members there. So I've been able to play there as well. And I've played in Kilkenny Golf Club a few times as well. There's lots of things going on at the moment because lots of golfing events were postponed, obviously, and they're all sort of taking place at this time. But now the level 3 lockdown, of course, is curtailing those sort of events. Now, the other things, I obviously miss going to hurling matches, John. We've been watching them on TV and Skyping and webcam and so forth. It's not the same as going to the match, but it's a substitute. And I suppose we're hoping that things won't get worse and the Intercounty Hurling Championship and Football Championship will be able to start up and we'll at least be able to watch them on television.
What's it like being in England, John, John Giles, with the lockdown over there? What, is it strict? Is it more lax? What's the situation with your community over there?
It was pretty much the same as home, really, John. I mean, in different parts of the countries now, when it spikes, then they put the lockdown situation back into. I'm in Birmingham, and it hasn't been so bad. You know, I was allowed to go for, or we were allowed to go for a walk at the early stages, and still can go for a walk, as long as you're not bumping into people and going to pubs and all the various things that you're not supposed to do. It's not too bad. I don't find it too bad. It's obviously very bad for business and people who have to go to work and that. I mean, I'm not working at the moment anyway. Just a little bit of work I do on the radio now. So I don't have to go anywhere. The matches I can do because the matches are on, as we know. There's no crowds at them. So there's been lots and lots of matches in the last couple of months to make up for the time when they couldn't play. New season has started. So I'd be relatively busy at home watching the football, getting out for a walk. Now the golf club is open, but you have to book a place. So I haven't played golf since this whole business started. Hopefully, I want to get back playing again. I'm not playing very well anyway, but it's not too bad. For what I need to do, I can get out for my walk. I'm okay. There's no restriction on how far you can go for the walk. Don't go that far anyway. So it's okay.
Yeah.
Could do without it, as we know, John. As I said before, like I'm not going to break any rules. I'm terrified of it, so I'll keep the head down.
What do you miss the most, John? Is it the drink with a friend? Is it the freedom? Is it just coming over to Dublin? Is it just the freedom being curtailed? Is that the when you're having to cocoon?
Well, yeah, I'm not bothered about the freedom in itself. I don't go out very much anyway, John. I do miss going over to Dublin. I have a daughter in Dublin. I have a son in, a daughter in Wexford and a son in Dublin. Grandkids there, and it's almost impossible to go over. So I miss that. I need to go to Dublin to do a few bits and pieces. But I'll wait. You know, I can't do anything else really. So it could do without it, as we know, John. But keeping out of trouble is for my wife and myself. Is the main thing. So we're not too bad. It hasn't affected me that much.
Yeah.
I mean, all the people around me, I know it's very difficult for people in Ireland and England, the economy and all the various things. But on a personal note, I'm not doing that much different in a way that's before the lockdown and this epidemic.
Rosemary, all I hear from you is a sense of adventure with all the rallying you've done and being in a Formula One car. How has your community and your neighbours specifically rallied around about supporting each other in the last few months?
Brilliant. They were absolutely brilliant. I'm in a little sort of cul-de-sac place and people that a lot of them I didn't know at all. And yet I used to sit out in the front garden and my next door neighbour, Deborah, she'd sit in her front garden and we'd have a glass of wine on the wall between us. And then all the neighbours came along and they were just terrific. What can we do? Do you want your messages got? Is there anything we can do? But you see, the funny thing, I can't think I'm old. That's the thing. So I've been saying to other people, probably younger than I am, but, you know, I'm obviously older than they are. But I'd say, is there anything I can do for you? You know, do you want me to get you some messages or something? And, you know, they've been absolutely fantastic. And it's brought the whole community together. And everybody in the community basically have got a dog since this whole thing started. And I said, I would have loved to have had the dog because I always had dogs in my life. I at one stage, I had six when I had the big house. And I don't have any now. And like, unlike the two Johns who have wives and children and so on, I don't have a husband and I don't have children. So I am on my own, but I'm lucky I'm not a lonely person. You know, there's always something. Read the newspapers, you know, look at the television, do something. I've taken up my painting again because I gave that up. I was so busy for the last number of years. As I say, since the book came out, and I didn't realise so many people would be interested in somebody who'd driven cars for a living, and that's what I did. But the only difficulty is that I say for a living, but we never got paid for it. We got expenses, but it's not like nowadays when no matter what you do, you get paid for it. Even the pandemic people got paid, which I didn't because I was too old. But anyway, sure, I shall survive a bit longer. But no, I didn't really mind it that much. But, you know, I am worried. I think that really we haven't seen the worst of it yet, because some people still haven't, as I said before, they haven't realised that it's a deadly disease. It's not like, you know, oh no, it's like flu. It's not like flu. It can kill very quickly.
Yeah.
But people, and certainly, I mean, the younger people, because initially they said younger people couldn't get it. It was only for the golden oldies. And then, of course, they've had to retract that now to say that anybody can get it, basically.
Would you support this full lockdown then, Rosemary?
No, not a total lockdown. I don't think you can do that, because you'll never get it done anyway, because what they'll do is the ones that don't want to be locked down are not going to stay locked down. They'll find a way of getting, whether, you know, drink or going out with their friends or something. They will do it. I mean, you know, it just thrives on crowds. It really thrives on crowds. So I unfortunately don't think we've seen the worst of it yet.
And Eddie, would you support a full level 5 lockdown?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we're all grasping for solutions now. If people would adhere to, I think, level 3, and I think as John mentioned and Rosemary mentioned, if we all do what we're supposed to do, which is not go on gatherings, you know, wear the face mask, keep away from people, you know, I think level 3 will probably work for a good while. Now, obviously, from as we know the virus, from day to day, things change. So we may have to go to level 5. And if we have to, we have to do it. And the more people we get to cooperate, the better we'll get over this virus. But a lot of good things have come out of it too for myself. You know, I've learned, we're on Skype now. I didn't know how to do Skype before. I've been on Zoom. I've got a few more things on my iPhone. I've been watching stuff on Netflix, on YouTube, things I never knew existed. So I'm learning a good bit from it. I did say, I think I things I missed, like, and this will come back again if we go to level 5, is our children. We have 5 children. 3 of them are fairly local, and we were able to meet them over the last couple of months. Freely enough by keeping social distancing. I have 12 grandchildren, and weren't able to hug them, of course, but we did see them at a distance. I have one son in Australia with 2 children, but the Zoom was brilliant. We had meetings on Zoom every week, and we all got together, all the family. And also we have a circle of friends. On another night, we got together and met that way and had the usual old chat. So there's a lot of good things we got out of it. And I think what Rosemary mentioned there about friends and neighbours, we've suddenly, as a nation, we've discovered what friendship and neighbourliness is, and how people can cooperate and work out things together. That is a thing that was sort of lost in our Irish society, and it's wonderful to have it back again. The other thing I'd like to mention, I have, I suppose, a reasonably strong Catholic faith, and I've been watching Mass every morning. I used to go to Mass maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. But I got into the habit of watching Mass every day on television. And I think I got a new whole lease of life in listening to the readings in the Gospels and the homilies, the wonderful homilies by various priests throughout the country. And I think that's inspirational. And it just goes to show that this problem that we have now has been replicated over the millennia, and people have learned to deal with it. And I think having a faith is very helpful and very supportive. And we learn a lot from readings and homilies. So it's been a great help to me, I have to say.
Absolutely, Eddie. And you're just illustrating there how technology is actually a benefit in certain times. I remember, like, there was a polio epidemic that halted the 1956 hurling championship. And it's great to see that there's definitely innovative ways of consuming and actually then communicating with other people. What are you watching on Netflix, Eddie?
Pardon?
What are you watching on Netflix?
I was watching a number of series. I watched Designated Survivor, which was brilliant. Watched a series on The Messiah, and one or two other series, and they were captivating. I didn't even know it existed. On YouTube, I'm able to watch all the old matches. I like snooker. I was watching snooker on YouTube. I was watching some music. I'm big into music as well. I should have mentioned that. One of the things I missed, we have a very good parish choir here, and I still love, if we could do it, practicing and singing at Mass. And of course, that's totally out at the moment. I miss that. But I love music, all kinds of music. And you can look up anything and see artists performing on YouTube. And I really enjoy that as well.
Yeah. And John, are you a man for the Netflix?
Yeah, I just got it recently, John. Funny enough, good, the kids put it in for me. I've watched a few of The Last Dance, mostly sports stuff, Muhammad Ali. I just find it fascinating, you know, because before you'd look at the television and you couldn't find a program that you'd like. But Netflix, there's so many on it. I don't know where to start sometimes. I find it absolutely brilliant. Really, really good.
Did you find Michael Jordan impressive, John?
Yeah. I thought his attitude to his profession was absolutely outstanding. He was never satisfied with what he did. He encouraged people, more than encouraged people around him, to try and meet his standards, which were very, very, very hard to achieve. And he obviously had a gift to do what he was doing, and I think he realised that it was a gift, and he was going to make the most of it, which, watching the documentary, he certainly did. I didn't have much interest in basketball, to be quite honest, John, till I watched this and saw the skills and slow motion and all the various things that he could do. So it was very, very impressive. And I think anybody watching it, young kids watching it, whatever sports they're in, to see the attitude that he had and his approach to his profession was absolutely brilliant.
And would you ever watch classic football? Is that something you enjoy, John?
What's that, sorry, John?
Would you ever watch classic football matches like Leeds United from the 60s, 70s? Is that something you'd ever enjoy?
I would watch it if it was on now and again, John. You know, I wouldn't be going out of my way to get the old matches in. Yeah, I wouldn't go out of my way, but I'd watch it if it was on. And actually, I'd enjoy them up to a certain point. But again, when you'd watch it, you'd be making mistakes in the match, and it would knock me off again. Saying some of the things you did, I think, like, again, I think Eddie would be the same. Rosemary was the same. When you're in any sort of sport, and Rosemary's a very, very dangerous sport, I don't know how she did it, you're looking for perfection. I'm sure Eddie was the same, Rosemary was the same, and I was looking for perfection, never got it. So when I look at the old films now, or the matches, like the things that you did well, you take for granted. It's the things that you didn't do well that really get you down. And I find that even watching the old matches now. But I'd watch them if they're on sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. John Giles, Rosemary Smith and Eddie Kerr. We've got to take a break. Back with the Saturday panel after this. Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. We're streaming live as well. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels. For Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it. This week's Saturday panel on OTB is about celebrating and connecting older people in our communities with thanks to the charity Alone, supported by Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie. We're speaking to three legends of sport, football's John Giles, rallying's Rosemary Smith, and hurling's Eddie Carr, of how they've been doing over the last few months during this difficult pandemic, and maybe doing a bit of reminiscing and also talking about their expectations of sport returning. I was just speaking earlier on, I mean, I go to see my uncle. He's in Limerick, he's 86. He's lived on his own for a quarter of a century, guys. And the one thing I love to speak to Fancy about is just his life experience, what life was like, his interests. He loves history. He loves talking about World War II and that kind of thing. And when I think about sporting legends like John Giles, like Rosemary Smith, like Eddie Carr, the tapestry of what you've done is so evident, whether it's with Leeds United or the Irish national team, John, or with Kilkenny Hurling, Eddie, or with rallying, Rosemary. When you think back about the fact that we can't forget anything that you did, I know there are a lot of older people out there sometimes are forgotten about. When I just liked speaking to my uncle, it's about life experience. When you think back, John, on your sporting career and the moments that you had and all those great moments, what things put a smile on your face about your life in sport?
When I was a kid, obviously, I was a soccer man. I played a bit of Gaelic. I loved that. Wasn't too good at it. Or hurling, Eddie, for that matter. But I took an interest in all sports. But soccer was my sport. I was born and reared in Dublin. My father was a soccer man. And I, from the time, as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a footballer. And I went to Manchester United when I was 15. And I always felt, and I don't want to be too religious here, that I realised, I think, early on in my life that I had a gift to play football. It was a gift. And I don't know where it came from. I'm sure it was from the man above. And I felt that was a gift I had. And the second gift that I was given was to realise that I had a gift. Because we've all seen so many players. I've seen so many players in football. They're very, very talented. Don't behave themselves and to go out of the game very quickly. So my ambition was to be, hopefully, to make the best of the gift that I had. And it was a selfish thing, an unselfish thing in many ways, because when I got older, I wanted to do that, because when I finished playing, I wanted to have an easy conscience about being good to the gift. So there was two gifts there, the gift to play and the gift to realise it was a gift. So I was very, very lucky in that respect, John, because I was able to play at a certain level. When I finished playing, people asked me, do I miss playing? I said no, because I was almost 40 when I finished playing at top class football. So I realised then I'd given it all that I had, if that's the right way to express it. But I loved it. I loved playing. I was a kid going to Dalyman Park with my father to watch the international team. And like most kids, that's what I wanted to do. I'm sure it'd be like Eddie, who wants to play in the All-Ireland hurling final, and Rosemary doing her stuff in the way that she did it. And I was very lucky to achieve most of the things that I sought perfection when I played, and I never got it. But that's what I saw. So when I finished playing, I was able to hang my boots up and say, right, I've done my stuff, and that's the end of it. I've got the rest of my life to live at that particular time. I think Rosemary was gifted with what she did. I think Eddie was gifted with what he did. All people who are doing things that most people don't do, it's a gift. So, lucky enough, I appreciated that. I don't want to be too holy Moses about it. I don't mean it in that way whatsoever. But that's what drove me on when I played football, to play every game as best I could and try and seek the perfection. Never did that. But as I said, when I was a kid, I went to Dalyman Park. I wanted the one thing I remember most probably about football is my first international cap. I was picked to play against Sweden when I was too short of 19. And I went to Dalymount over the years and saw all the great players playing, Noel Cantwell and Charlie Hurley, Jackie Carey. I wanted to emulate those particular people. And I only played two matches for Manchester United. So it came very, very quickly, sooner than I thought. And we played Sweden in Dagenham Park. We were two down after 10 minutes. And I was lucky enough to score a good goal. And we went on to win the game 3-2. So that would be the highlight of my career as a footballer, playing in the international team and winning. We didn't win very often after that, but we won. So that would be my take on it, John, as a professional footballer. Or sometimes, you know, Eddie wasn't a professional footballer. Rosemary Johansson, she says she wasn't making money doing what she did, but she loved doing what she did. And I'm sure Eddie was the same. So there's a great satisfaction in that. And I haven't finished your playing career. I don't think Rosemary wants to finish yet, even to look back and say, well, I did the best with what I was given.
So playing for the international team was the pinnacle for you, John. That's the thing you think about maybe when you're reminiscing.
Well, yeah. Well, it was the thing that I wanted to do most when I was a kid. Actually, I was a Manchester United supporter when I was a kid, mainly because Jackie Carey, who was a great Irish player, was footballer of the year in 1949. They won the cup in 1948. So I was attracted to Manchester United from that. I played for Manchester United, not for very long, but my main career was at Leeds United. And I was lucky enough to win a cup winners' medal at Manchester United before I left. We won a few trophies at Leeds as well. We won some, we lost some. But I think you have to lose a few as well to appreciate when you do win. And I think that was the case with the Leeds United lads. When we lost something that we maybe should have won, we were more determined the next year to go on and win something. And it was a pleasure and a privilege to play with those particular players.
Eddie, you're just talking there about watching matches back. I hope you watched some of your own great finals. 1969, you're the captain of Kilkenny. 72, you're hurler of the year. Are there days, are there moments that stand out when you're like thinking about your life experience and you're sharing it with others in a conversation?
There are, of course. You know, I suppose I came on, like John, I was an early starter. I came on in the All-Ireland replay from the minor team. I was 17 in 1959. And I suppose one of the highlights then would be my first All-Ireland to win. We lost 59. We won in 1963. So obviously our first All-Ireland medal is a fair highlight to look back on. The other thing, I suppose, with hurling and Gaelic football, you have your club and your county, and both stand equally. And in 1968, our own team, which is the Roar Ina Stig, won the county championship, the one and only county senior championship. And that was a big milestone. And from that then, I was made captain of the Kilkenny team in 1969. And we won that match against Cork. So as being captain of a winning team was fantastic. I suppose 72 was a great year as well. We had some other, luckily I got six All-Ireland wins, and they were all, I suppose, equally pleasing. I was interested in John's comment there about talent, you know, and the way he worked on his talent, and mention about some players. It's funny, it's not funny really, but to look back on very talented players who didn't make it because they didn't knuckle down to it, and they don't realise that their hurling or football or whatever career is so short. You know, it passes that, and suddenly they wake up when they're in their late 20s and have lost the chance. But every game has to be worked at, and it was always clear from John Giles's performances that he worked on his game. I think we'd both admit that we weren't the greatest players ever anywhere, but we worked at our game and tried to reach our full potential and did everything we could to reach that potential in every game. And talking about prayer, I always prayed before a match, not that we'd win, that'd be unfair, but that I wouldn't let the team down. And it gave me a great sense of security going into a game, you know, and I hope during my career that I didn't leave the team down on too many occasions.
Well, absolutely not. With the incredible career you had, Eddie, with the Kilkenny in the black and amber. Rosemary, Are there moments in your rallying life that or your wider life that stand out as put a smile on your face and you share with a great anecdote or a story for people that might ask you like we're doing now?
Yeah, there's always a smile on my face anyway. So I was in a very different situation than the two lads, in as much that I was a dolly bird trying to break into a man's particular sport. And it was extremely difficult in the beginning. And it was only because my dad, who had done a little bit of racing, not very much, but a little bit, and he kept saying to me, no, go on, show them. Whereas I knew I was a reasonably good driver. I wouldn't say like the other two people being very, you know, I think being very sort of naive in what they're saying, because they were both great in their own time and their own place. But I just had to fight the thing against men as well as trying to win a rally. And, you know, I'd get this thing, oh, she's a dolly bird coming out. What does she think she's doing? Now, when you're sort of 17, 18, 19, starting off in motorsport, I mean, I was a laugh to a lot of them. So I had to prove that I could be just more than just a laugh. I had to prove that I was good enough to beat some of the men. And then I started, and I did, I started beating them. And then they started looking at me in a totally different light. And at the end of what we call a special stage, you know, about three or four of them would come up. What time did you do, Rosemary? What time did you do? Because everything in a rally is down to seconds. It's not down to minutes, down to seconds. And, you know, what did you do on that stage? And what did you do? And then they realized. And then I'd got through that hurdle. But I still was a bit of the dolly bird. Then I did Monte Carlo Rally. I was invited over by a girl in England to do the Monte Carlo Rally. And again, you know, we went out on that. I had no idea what snow and ice was. I mean, I knew what it was, but not to drive on it. And it was so totally different. And the camaraderie that eventually I got here in Ireland certainly wasn't on any of those very big events, because they weren't the biggest events in the world at that stage for our particular sport. And but we got to Monte Carlo anyway, and we'd done reasonably well. When I say we got there, we slithered and slid down the mountains and up the mountains and everywhere else, but we did get there. And at the dinner at the end of it, and you know, this man came up, and he was, now I was all dressed up, because years ago I used to model, so I always liked to try and look well when I went out in any of these events. And this man came up, very English man, and he said, oh, I think I want you to come and drive for us. And I thought, yeah, what army? But anyway, he said, yes, I wanted to join. And it was the Roots Group. Now, the Roots Group are well and truly out of production, that they've been out for years and years and years. But they had the Sunbeam Imps and the Sunbeam Alpines and the Rapiers and all these things, but they weren't really doing very well in competition. So this was Norman Garrett, who was the manager for Roots at that stage, and he thought, well, if we can't win a rally, we might as well have a dolly bird that she can sort of sit on the bonnet of the car and dangle her legs over the front of it and be nice to the photographers. So that was all right. But what he didn't realise then was that there were three men's teams in our own team, and then myself. So there were four of us. And then he realised that I was the only one that was actually winning anything. And then the lot of the boys, they were just, and the cars weren't fast enough, and this wasn't fast enough, and the road holding wasn't good enough. You see, I don't know anything about cars, except I sit behind the wheel and I sort of turn the wheel. But what's great now is that, you know, they do recognize the things. Like, we did everything. East African Safari, London, Mexico, London, Sydney, right across Canada, the Shell 4000 without any mechanical help at all. We had to do our own mechanical work, down in Australia, New Zealand. But it wasn't advertised. There was no Skype. There was no, you know, Facebook. Nobody knew what we were doing. Nobody knew. The only time I got a really big thing was once when I drove the car off the edge of the cliff in Monte Carlo, and that was a bit traumatic, and it was all over the papers here in Dublin. And then the next time was when I won the International Tulip Rally outright. And I remember Jack Lynch was the Taoiseach at the time, and I got a lovely thing from him. What were they called in those days? Telegram. And, you know, and he came out to meet me out at the airport when I came back. But, I mean, people have no idea what we did, the thousands of miles we did, and you know, rolling down sides of cliffs and, you know, all this sort of carry on. But if you did and you were all right, well, you just sort of went off again and you did the next one. The whole thing, and I say to youngsters today, and a lot, there are a lot more girls driving nowadays, which I'm very glad to see.
Yeah.
There's a group now, it's Formula Women, and there's, you know, Women in Sport, and there are a lot of them. Here in Ireland now, there's a little girl called Nikki Daly, and she's sort of trying to get more and more and more girls in it. How she's doing it is she's going around the schools and she's getting the school kids to drive go-karts. And it's the way a lot from Michael Schumacher to any of the big ones that, you know, Lewis Hamilton, any of them, they all started in go-karts. Now she's doing that with the girls in schools. And then they come on and they come to Mondello and then they start. And there are some very, very good girls coming on. But they just, I mean, they've more confidence than I ever had. I mean, if somebody said you were useless, I'd go home and cry because I felt, oh, I am useless. But the kids nowadays, no, they don't. They say, right, we'll go and we'll try. And stuff anybody who says we're not good enough. We'll just go out there and we're going to prove it, which I think is brilliant. I'm delighted.
No, you're absolutely right, Rosemary, and that's inspirational. We're having this conversation with some of our older sports stars, John Giles, Rosemary Smith and Eddie Kerr, in conjunction with Alone, the charity. It does great work in providing the support system for older people throughout Ireland, helping and empowering them, whether it's a volunteer that befriends an older person and meets them once a week, or practical housing support or financial and legal advice. There's a charity out there with thousands of volunteers, and we should avail of it, especially during this tricky time. Just to finish up, everybody, we're all desperate for sport to come back. We're all desperate for matches to return in the proper way and to watch it. And it's been great listening from you today. Just to finish up, what would be, with the benefit of wisdom now, the advice you'd give to your younger self, Eddie?
To my younger self? As regards sport?
Regards life.
Difficult question to answer just like that. I suppose, you know, you have to be true to yourself. I think John made a very interesting point about having a talent. And I think to, if you have a talent, whether it is in rallying or soccer or hurling or whatever, get the best out of it you can while you can, you know. And life passes quickly. And it's great to come to the end of your career or whatever you want to do and be able to say to yourself, I certainly did my best at it and I used whatever talent I was given to the fullest. So I think that's a message I give to young people, particularly in nowadays when it's easy to go off the rails. But sport will bring you a long way. And I think to use that talent in the sport you're playing. I thought it's sort of funny that when John mentioned about Rosemary, about her dangerous sport, I don't think John or I would have a hope of doing what she did. And it reminded me, I had the pleasure of meeting a great admirer of most sports people, Muhammad Ali. And when he was here, and I was brought out to try and teach him how to hurl. But I was talking to him afterwards. He said, you play hurling, he said to me. And I said, yeah. And he looked into my face to see, was I all scarred? He said, that's a very dangerous sport, he said. And I was thinking of him getting into the ring with Sonny Liston and all these guys, you know. So everyone looks at everyone else's sport differently. But the one you're good at, do your very best with it. That's all I could say.
How charismatic was he, Eddie?
He was absolutely fantastic. A very ordinary guy. When I met him in the hotel first, we had a good chat, and Angela Dundee, his trainer, was there, and he was very ordinary. And I was to go out then, there was a press thing, they were trying to build up he was fighting Al Blue Lewis in Croke Park that day. Ticket sales were slow, and we were going to be in the All-Ireland final, and it was 1972, and they tried to get a bit of publicity, and they asked me out to try and teach him how to play hurling. So anyway, having had a good chat inside, we went out to meet the press, and I found him to be a lovely, ordinary guy inside. But when we got to the press, he turned into the Muhammad Ali that we sort of got to know on television, and he was a howl. He was really funny and played to the media, and, you know, it was a wonderful experience for me to experience that.
You met the greatest, Eddie, and John Giles, also one of the greatest footballers we've ever had in this country. John, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Do it today. Don't wait for tomorrow. Goes too quickly.
That's great. That's great. And Rosemary, yourself, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Don't let anybody put you down. I mean, really don't, because, you know, the younger people now, and I'm glad to see it, they are coming out and they're standing up straight and they're saying, I can do this. Look at the girls who've done so well. Look at Katie Taylor. I mean, years ago, if she'd said, I want to be a boxer, she would have been laughed out of the ring. But I mean, now they realise, girls, look at the jockeys, some of the girls, Rachel Blackmore now, she's wonderful. But, you know, you've got to have faith in yourself as well. And don't ever let anybody put you down.
Well, Rosemary Smith, John Giles, Eddie Kerr, I want to thank you all for speaking so eloquently on the Saturday panel today. We really appreciate your wisdom. We hope Christmas is good for you, and we hope you're safe and your families are safe. And we'd like to thank you so much for your time. And we wish you all the best.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, all you guys, and enjoy the rest of the few months and Christmas.
Bye, Eddie. Bye, Rosemary. Lovely to meet you.
Bye, John. Bye, Rosemary.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk, speaking about football and a review of the Republic of Ireland's match with Slovakia after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.